Guardian Unlimited.
Benazir Bhutto may have been killed by terrorists, but the terrorists must not be allowed to kill democracy in Pakistan.
From matriarch to martyr, the assassination of Benazir Bhutto plunges Pakistan into political turmoil. How will the world react to a new crisis at the heart of its most volatile region?
The partnership between Benazir and Musharraf was plan A for the Americans and for the British, and there is no plan B.
Over the next 15 minutes, we'll assess the geopolitical implications of the murder of the West's great white hope for democracy in Pakistan. We'll hear from expert correspondents at the Guardian and Observer newspapers. We'll take in reaction from around the world and in Pakistan. And we'll discuss the legacy of Benazir Bhutto.
The whole package of Bhutto was a mixture of ambition, personal belief, and the whole was indivisible. It was impossible to say where the ambition on a personal level started and ambition for our country stopped.
I'm Matt Wells, and this is a special edition of Newsdesk from Guardian Unlimited. Benazir Bhutto cradled the hopes of Western leaders desperate to coat Pakistan with a veneer of democratic respectability. Now those hopes are in flames after the former Prime Minister was killed by a suicide bomber as she addressed a crowd of her Pakistan People's Party supporters in Rawalpindi. Benazir Bhutto's death has cast doubt over elections planned for January the 8th. Her fellow opposition leader and great rival, Nawaz Sharif, also a former prime minister, today said his Muslim League party would boycott the elections, predicting they'd be a disaster for Pakistan. But President Pervez Musharraf, who stepped down as leader of the army only a month ago in order to satisfy the demands of the West that he return Pakistan to democracy, said the elections would go ahead. Hamid Khan from the Pakistan High Commission in London said today that the implications for his country were grave.
It's a big loss for all Pakistanis. It's a loss for the nation. It's a loss for Pakistani politics. It's a loss for Pakistani people. And God forbid, it might even be a loss, for the very cause of democracy that she was fighting for.
Mrs. Bhutto's funeral was taking place today in Sindh province, where police have been ordered to shoot rioters on sight. Just before it started, there were reports that police had fired on demonstrators in Hyderabad. Mrs. Bhutto was being buried in the family mausoleum next to the body of her father, whose execution pushed her into the political spotlight. It's the latest tragedy to strike a dynasty steeped in blood and politics. We'll talk more about that later. Today, though, world leaders were considering the more immediate implications of her death.
Benazir Bhutto was a woman of immense personal courage and bravery. Knowing as she did the threats to her life, the previous attempt at assassination, she risked everything in her attempt to win democracy in Pakistan. And she has been assassinated by cowards afraid of democracy. Benazir Bhutto may have been killed by terrorists, but the terrorists must not be allowed to kill democracy in Pakistan.
Mrs. Bhutto served her nation twice as Prime Minister, and she knew that her return to Pakistan earlier this year put her life at risk. Yet she refused to allow assassins to dictate the course of her country. We stand with the people of Pakistan in their struggle against the forces of terror and extremism. We urge them to honor Benazir Bhutto's memory by continuing with the democratic process for which she so bravely gave her life.
Since it was formed by the partition of India in 1947, the destiny of Pakistan has been bound to that of the region and the rest of the world. It's a microcosm of the struggle between secular Western democracy and hardline theocratic rule. The assassination of Benazir Bhutto intensifies that struggle and puts Pakistan at the top of the league of diplomatic crises. But what makes it such a significant world power? Here's The Guardian's diplomatic editor, Julian Borger.
It's a nuclear power. It's in a long-running nuclear standoff with India, a very tense relationship. It's critical to what happens in Afghanistan, which is very much a situation in balance. It is a hotbed of Islamic fanaticism, extremism, which has had a very direct effect in Britain, for example, because the bombers who've struck Britain have all gone to training camps there. They've all passed through Pakistan. And it is very much a society in turmoil and a society in a struggle between secular democracy and a religious extremist tide coming from the West, coming from Afghanistan.
And given all of that, as you say, nuclear power bordering Afghanistan, Iran, India, key ally of the West nevertheless. So what does a weak Pakistan mean for the rest of the world?
Well, it means uncertainty ultimately in the stewardship of the nuclear weapons. I mean, that is the great nightmare. Now, they are under the stewardship of the army. Pakistani officials always say it's silly to worry about them because the army is always the army, no matter what happens in politics. But there are fears. What if the army splits? What if the army is taken over from the inside by extremists? There are question marks there. Then there are knock-on effects of what happens to the relationship with India. A weak Pakistani government could be more dangerous, more threatening to stability than a strong one. And that goes for the situation in Afghanistan too, where what happens in Pakistan has a big influence on the areas, the tribal areas on the border where Al-Qaeda and Taliban are based.
So what does the assassination then mean for Pakistan itself? Can President Musharraf reassert control, or do you predict political turmoil?
Well, Benazir Bhutto's return was a symptom of Musharraf not being able to carry on his own. He lacks legitimacy. His only constituency was the army, and now he's stepped back down as head of the army. The deal between the two of them that was brokered by the US with British help was designed to give him that legitimacy. Benazir Bhutto and her party would be his base and work in partnership with him, allowing him to carry on in power and yet claim that legitimacy that up to now he's sorely lacked. So without her on the scene, his future is very much in question as well.
And as you say, it was the US and the UK that brokered the deal that allowed her to return. Where does her assassination leave their diplomatic strategies now?
Well, she was really plan A. The kind of partnership between Benazir and Musharraf was plan A for the Americans and for the British, and there is no plan B. They're all scratching their heads now. They're hoping for the best. They're trying to nudge the parties, Sharif's party and the PPP, Bhutto's party.
This is Nawaz Sharif, who was her great political opponent.
That's right, the rival, but nevertheless, both civilian politicians, both to some extent united in resistance or opposition to Musharraf. And so they did have a certain amount of common ground, and now British and American diplomats are exploring how much common ground there is left between Sharif's party and the PPP in the hope of trying to nudge together a sort of progressive coalition as a bulwark against the more conservative, religious, militant parties.
So is Nawaz Sharif now the only option? The UN Security Council said that the events in Pakistan pose a threat to international stability, and you've explained why. The world leaders are presumably in something of a panic this morning.
Yeah, I would say they probably are. The Americans, we know, have reached out to Nawaz Sharif reluctantly. It will almost certainly because they've never really trusted him. They've seen him as a politician with links to the Islamists. And yet, without a clear leader emerging in the PPP to take Bhutto's place, and the PPP has always been run by a Bhutto, it's a very personally run party. Without a clear leader of the PPP, then maybe Nawaz Sharif, in terms of the civilian leadership available, is the only option in town.
He is a former prime minister, of course, so was Benazir Bhutto, and both were competing in the elections that were due to take place in January. Can those elections now go ahead, do you think?
It's difficult to say. The government insists they will go ahead, but Nawaz Sharif has said he'll boycott, and maybe the really important decision will be made by the PPP, the surviving leadership, whether it suits them to go ahead, benefit maybe from a sympathy vote, or whether they need time to get the leadership together. If they don't want to take part, then it's very hard to see how elections could take place with both of the main sort of mainstream moderate parties opting out.
Julian Borger there. Benazir Bhutto was destined to make it to the top of the political elite in Pakistan since the execution of her father. She led her country twice, but both times her rule was mired in controversy. She returned from exile earlier this year, and the plan was that she would take part in elections in January, thereby giving the regime of President Musharraf some democratic legitimacy. The Observer's chief foreign correspondent, Jason Burke, has reported extensively from the region and met Mrs. Bhutto many times. I asked him about her legacy.
The Bhutto family history is very much part of the history of modern Pakistan. Her father, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, founded the Pakistan's People Party way back in the late 60s and then rode it to power effectively on a populist, national, socialist style program, very much copying what was happening elsewhere in the Middle East at the time in terms of socialist programs, central planning and so forth. He was then deposed effectively by General Zia, the military dictator, who then went on to rule Pakistan through the hanging Zulfikar Ali Bhutto and imprisoning his daughter Benazir. When Zia was killed, Benazir came back to Pakistan and won power in 1988 elections, which were meant to be a bright new dawn for Pakistan. As ever, it wasn't. She was in and out of power through the 90s. I actually met her for the first time in the late 90s, in 98, when she was at a low point in her political career and, in fact, left Pakistan in 99, a few months before General Pervez Musharraf's military coup, hounded by political opponents and by corruption charges that she always said were politically motivated.
Now, she said that this was not the life that she chose. It chose me, she said, but I accepted the responsibility and I've never wavered. Do you get the sense, however, that she was as committed to Pakistani politics and the Pakistani people as she said she was? Because she was a controversial figure.
Benazir was a deeply flawed figure, certainly. It's very difficult to say where her love for the Pakistani people and her love for her own political career started or stopped. The two were intimately fused in her own being. I interviewed her 2 weeks ago, and one of the last things she said to me when I asked her why she'd just gone on an impromptu walkabout in a very dangerous part of Northwest Frontier Province was, I got out of the car because that's where the people are, and I wanted to go out and meet the people. Now, in a sense, that's a very good thing, in that as a politician who wants to go and meet the people, in a sense, it's a very bad thing, in that she has to go and meet the people. She'd been out of Pakistan for 8 years, didn't really know her own country in some ways, and also obviously comes from an elite, wealthy, landowning family, certainly has not never did drag herself up by her bootstraps, if you like. Hmm. The whole package of Bhutto was a mixture of ambition, personal belief, belief in Pakistan, her own role in Pakistan, her family's role in Pakistan, and the whole was indivisible. It was impossible to say where the ambition on a personal level started and ambition for her country stopped.
You said that she would get out of her vehicle and walk around. That's what cost her her life this week. She must have known in returning to Pakistan and doing the things that she was doing that this was a possibility. Indeed, she talked about that as a possibility. Do you think it was inevitable even, and that even in an odd way was actually part of the Benazir Bhutto plan?
No, I don't think it's part of the Bhutto plan. I don't think it was inevitable either. I think when you're at the centre of these things, you tend to underestimate the risks. She was aware of the risks. She always talked about security. She was very worried about the lack, as she saw it, of security precautions that she and her entourage had. Clearly, she was very shaken by the bomb in Karachi on October the 18th when she came back. But I don't think anything really would have stopped her. There was nothing else she could do as a person, as much as a politician, other than go back to Pakistan and campaign and try and win power and do what she has always done and what her father did. I think the influence of her father and the example of her father was very important to her. She was one of the last people to see him alive, saw him in his prison cell before he was hanged, and I think she very much felt that she was the bearer of the legacy of her father and that she had no choice. As I say, there was no risk that was high enough effectively to stop her doing what she felt was the only thing she could do.
She was plunged into politics, as you say, as the result of the execution of her father. Who will take on her legacy?
Nobody, I think, is the answer. I think the Bhutto dynasty stops here. I don't think the Pakistan People's Party can exist in its present form without a Bhutto at its head. It's likely to split. There are other senior leadership figures who actually have been very unhappy with the domination of the party by Mrs. Bhutto. The political legacy of Bhutto in many ways is bigger than her party or her views. However, she was a figure of on a global stage that was very well known. She's one of the few South Asian politicians and Middle Eastern politicians who have been in and out of power, who have been in opposition, who are globally known, who have the ear of presidents, of prime ministers, who address universities and have those sorts of contacts around the world. And I think that's going to be very difficult to replace for Pakistan externally, internally. Whatever her faults, she did incarnate some kind of modern secular alternative to the vision of Pakistan that the extremists propagate. That's going to be difficult to replace, certainly in someone with the charisma, the charm, the intelligence, if clearly the significant flaws as well of Benazir Bhutto.
Jason Burke, and you can keep up to date with the latest developments today from Pakistan at guardian.co.uk. There'll be updates later from our correspondent there, Declan Walsh, and commentary on commentisfree.co.uk. The next planned edition of Newsdesk is on January the 2nd. The producer today was Ben Green. I'm Matt Wells. Goodbye.
Guardian Unlimited.